So I wanted to start out by just talking a little bit about some of the things that have come up on the site lately. So we ran this really big roundtable of both kind of all sides of the feminist debate, and I thought it was great because we got a lot of really interesting discussion going on from all sides. We had people from both sides getting this aha experience. So there was a few feminists who had written comments to the effect of, you know, I never thought of looking at manhood and changing gender roles from a frame outside of feminism, that there was a way of looking at it that was outside feminism, and you just gave that to me. That's great. And then on the other side of it, there was just like really active MRA guys saying, you know, the type of feminists we have here on the site are really great, and they are the way feminism should be. And at one point, I emailed Joanna, and I said, I hear the strains of kumbaya, because this is like unbelievable that these people who usually just argue with us are saying, no, 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 this is really good, really important, the way you're doing it. But so that was all really good, and if you guys have other experiences, I'd like to hear it, but that was what I saw. But the question is, in our quest to become really a mainstream site, like in order to get to a profitable business model, we have to get mainstream. We have to get as mainstream as sites like Maxim and Ask Men and Men's Health. You know, those are the ones that are in the top 1,000, like out of all the sites in the world, out of all the websites in the world, those are the ones that are in the top 1,000. So like ESPN is number one, Sports Illustrated, whatever. And then those sites in the middle that are obviously geared towards the male audience are ranked about 400, 500, 600, you know, that they're in the top 1,000 sites. They're in the Fortune 1,000 of the media world. So the question is, how do we get there by maintaining our, you know, how do we get to that mainstream place in terms of traffic while still maintaining the integrity of our brand? And that's kind of the fascinating challenge, and that's what I wanted to throw out there to you guys. Like, do you find these discussions of feminism distracting? Do you think that they're where we should be? If that is where we should be, you know, is there a way to make that mainstream enough so it becomes a profitable business model? I will tell you that the sites that we've passed along our way up this road, we blew past all of the strictly male sites like The Spearhead and Voice for Men. Those are in the, like, ranked at like 100,000 out of the websites in the world. We're now at we're just over 10,000. Like, we're just about to get into the top, one of the top 10,000 websites in the world. And we just passed GQ, as a matter of fact, who's like ranked in the 11,000. We passed places like Ms. and Feminista. So the more feminist, actual feminist sites, we passed them a long time ago too. They have about double the amount of the MRA sites, but you know, they're in the 40,000, 50,000, 70,000 realm. So really the question is, you know, how do we get to the next, like, I think what we've done so far, we've done extraordinarily well, but the question is, how do we get into those ranks of being a mainstream conversation while still being as, you know, provocative and issue-based and on-brand as we are now? So that's what I'd like to open it up, open the discussion up to. I'm sorry,
now
you guys have to talk. Good.
I think that the answer is breadth more than balance. Because balance, you know, it's fairly pointless. we do have a lot of really popular pieces about gender, so all the ones that actually get popular from a feminist standpoint. But, you know, that's nobody's fault, it's just a fact. And the other stuff that really is our bread and butter is a lot of the just basic articles on guys' experiences, funny stories, things that happened, parenting, and guys, articles from male perspective on just dealing with life. And we run a lot of that, and it's great for us. So, like I said, breadth in terms of getting more aspects of just, you know, guys' issues that aren't necessarily even issues with a big guy. Like the post we ran last night from the Sexless Father. Looking at bringing him on board as a regular blogger. He's talking about something that a lot of guys can relate to, a lot can't, but he and his wife have very differing libidos since their child was born, and they're both trying to work on that and keep their marriage strong in a really positive and mutual way, which I think that's wonderful, and it's something we're not covering now, and I think there's a lot more room for growth in that kind of thing. Likewise, bringing on Andrew Ferentz is, you know, bringing us more of a sports angle of stuff, and also, actually, he likes talking about environmental issues, but I'm looking forward to some stuff from him on that. And I think that's where we're going to see more growth. Does that make sense?
Well, I like the way you said it was issues with issues, but not necessarily issues with a capital I. Like, I think that makes a lot of sense. Sorry, I was like,
this is a lot of day-to-day life stuff, you know?
I have a suggestion as well, Lisa. This is Mark. Lisa, I sent you contact information for Michael Belfiore. But what he's into is he's into really cutting-edge technology and space, private space industry stuff. And I think there's a whole... Yeah, there's a whole market out there for... I mean, look, let's face it. You know, if you go to... to Maxim, it's you know, sort of like the rating who's the hottest chick kind of stuff. And honestly, celebrity news is what drives the internet along with porn. But if you set those things aside as being too far from the mission, I think technology porn could be good. You know, that is really interesting stuff that DARPA's doing and that, you know, that the private space industry's doing. And Michael actually has access to a lot of those folks. And I know he's open to partnering, but maybe there are other technology stuff that might drive traffic. I don't know. That's just a suggestion.
Okay, we
that's an interesting thought.
We actually got a blog on board just last night, just in, called Complicated. And so their first post was on a flying car, which actually is just what it sounds and is a real thing. That was kind of interesting. The question is, I mean, it's how to take that, like, is there a focus that somehow makes it more about men, or do we not worry about that? Like,
it's a rocket.
That's a question in my mind.
That's right. Rockets. Rockets. More rockets. Rockets. You know.
I think it's a mistake to stereotype that, you know, women aren't into technology, but I think it's fair to assume that but an awful lot, a sufficient number of guys are fascinated by technology. So the same way we can run a sports section that's not ladies keep out, you know, I think we can run a technology section on the same basis. These things are stereotypically male, yes, but there's a lot of guys who, stereotypes aside, actively enjoy them.
Yeah, and I also think that
I don't think there's a contradiction there.
It's also good from an intellectual standpoint. It's not, we're not going lowbrow. But it has entertainment value.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
I was thinking in terms of ways that we can access, you know, be similar to mainstream blogs or access more mainstream audience. When there are Google trends, when there are news items that are trending, I think we should always have an article up right away addressing it. It might be from a particular perspective that speaks to, you know, enlightened masculinity or whatever, but I think we need to be hitting every trend every time it's up, like, immediately, so we're part of that conversation and we're part of those searches. And I also think longer feature pieces, you know, like if you're, you know, if you have longer interviews or longer feature pieces that are topical but also, you know, a few pages to scroll through, I think that would really help as well. I know there's a few longer pieces, but I think features can really draw in a crowd if it's a really in-depth and like a new take or a new issue that we're bringing attention to. And in thinking of that, there was a photo series I saw a while ago about a man who had PTSD. He had come back from Iraq, and there was all these amazing photos. I think the guy won a Pulitzer. And there's this amazing series just clicking through these pictures and some of the descriptions of what his life was like. Something like that to me seems like that's a great way to, you know.
Mark Sherman, okay, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, so, I agree with a lot of what everyone's saying. My two cents would be the sites that, you know, I personally like, I usually go because I am very invested in the writers, so in their voices. So, you know, I actually, even if I don't always agree with their opinions, I go and, you know, so like Charles Pierce at Esquire or like Tanishi Coates at The Atlantic. Like, you know, there's people who they're constantly writing stuff, reacting to stuff, talking about stuff, like illuminating their ideas. And I think we're doing that with the blogs, but if somehow, and The Nation, Mother Jones, like there's a part that says voices, and I think if we sort of like highlight the fact that there we have a regular set of voices that are specific to the Goodman Project, mm-hmm. where when you're looking for certain opinions, whether it be about the healthcare thing or whatever, you can come and, you know, these people's opinions, you'll see them and you know, you can feel invested and connected. You know, it's like a branding thing, I guess. So.
I wanted to say something. The idea, long features are good, except I have to admit, when I keep reading, unless it's incredibly well written, I have a certain limit. I also love the comments, but sometimes the comments are as long as a piece, and I think it's great when some are selected to be right on there by the editors. I think that's fantastic. But I sometimes, you know, I guess you don't want to limit the comments. I have a little trouble with that. I also want to say one thing, and maybe I'm an iconoclast, but I love this conference call because we're using a very old-fashioned technology. We're actually talking to each other, and I love that. And I think technology, you know, I don't always look at trends because what's happening, we really are not sure, and the trends come out of nowhere. I think some of the stuff I read, there's a lot of disenchantment with the degree to which technology, especially in communication, has taken over. There's a book by Sherry Turkle of MIT called Alone Together. Why, I have it right here. Why We Expect More from Technology and Less from Each Other. It's an excellent book. I'm just saying that might be, you know, in fact, Colin Slattery is writing something about being off Facebook or something. And isn't he doing something? I haven't read it yet.
Yep.
For a while.
Taking a break,
yeah.
You know what I mean? He's going 30
right.
years without it.
I know. I may be, you know, call me a Luddite. I mean, I'm obviously, I have a computer and I email all the time. By today's standards, I'm not into it so much. I just think there's a book out by someone named Lisa Bloom called Swagger, which is about boys and their issues. And she talks about boys in particular, but same thing for girls, how immersed children are, young people, in technology, how they multitask and how studies indicate, and I'm aware of this, that multitasking, you don't do anything really as well as you do something when you're more focused on one thing. So I'm just saying, I get nervous about let's join this thing. I'm not saying do away with technology, but just to be aware that we can overdo that as well. I'm just throwing that out there.
Okay, I'll call you a Luddite.
Go ahead. That's fine. That's fine.
I'm just kidding.
I use my. I'm on my computer constantly. I don't text, but that's me. I'm an old guy. But I just really, not so much with adults. I watch children who are sitting there in front of iPhones. I think something's missing, and I think texting when driving, which is happening. I'm just think there are certain problems when that's being used.
Absolutely.
That's all.
And I want to
why don't we just have more roundtable discussions like we did with the feminism thing around specific issues, like where a lot of the editors and writers, we all write pieces, you know, somebody stakes a claim and we all respond, because I think that also fosters like internal discussion amongst people who frequent the site, but also, you know, it then increases traffic because you link back to other pieces. It's just, you know, I found that that sort of discussion component happening. So
yeah, it makes it really engaged, and that's actually like we could brand it so you could do technology good versus bad. Like just keep it that simple, and then do a call around that, and that's how you get sort of the polarized things. But then when you run it, you call it a round table, just like we did. I mean, that's kind of what we did with feminism. We said feminism, good versus bad, you know what I mean? But it ended up being that people really were talking to each other in the middle, which was great. So I really like that. I really like that. I think we should definitely do more of that. And I think technology is a great one to start with. I mean, I'm not a guy, but I actually love technology. So I do. I just totally, like, can't get enough of it. So,
you know what I also think, Lisa,
that is in a broader sense, whether anyone particularly likes, you know, technology, whatever that may mean to a given person or not, doesn't have to matter, because that's what I'm talking about with Brett. If, we've got, you know, a bunch of content covering a broad swath of topics, then, you know, folks who are reading technology stuff, they can read our top-notch parenting stuff or our, political stuff or whatever.
Yeah,
but the point is, if we then do these roundtables where we say we can just brand it like good versus bad, you know what I mean? And then people who are really on the poles of it, you know, the people who are most engaged get really engaged around the topic that has these polarization built right in. That's what makes it provocative. And then the rest of the time, you know, we do those whenever, but then the rest of the time we just run the section. You're right, if you don't want to read about it, you don't have to. But you know that ultimately there's going to be these big group discussions where we do take sides, or not even take sides, but you know what I mean, talk about a view of that topic we feel really strongly about.
And what was great about the feminism thing is there was a hell of a lot of civility in it. And I think that's the other thing that people are really sick of, is this adversarial scream fests on the big media. And if we can take an issue and talk about the different points of view in a way which is respectful, I think that'll resonate with people.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I mean, not having, you know, it really is a round table where we're talking together civilly, but we are getting people who have opposing views. I really think that's a way to go.
Lisa?
Yeah.
This is Josh again. I just want to, I don't want to harp on this, but just having said it before, I feel like the roundtable is great, but if the question you're asking is how do we get in the top 1,000 sites, I think it's just really imperative that if there's a conversation happening online, and if there's something that's trending, and if there's some topic that is, you know, really huge, and to me, a lot of the time it's like when someone dies, or it's like the NBA draft, or it's a large political issue, like the healthcare issue, I feel like we should be a part of that conversation. I feel like people might go to Jezebel and get the feminist take on, you know, the NBA draft, like players and their mothers or something. And then they can go to, like, TSN, and they'll get, like, statistics breakdown, and then they go to a Good Men Project, and they get, you know, another take, like our take. I think it's important that whatever is happening out in the world, we're not so insular that we're not seeing that, and we're part of. Do you know what I mean?
I totally agree with you, Josh. Totally. Go ahead, Joanne.
We can remember this is when it was the NCAA mm-hmm. final, and
yeah.
we had definitely had the sports guys covering the actual games to some degree. But then we had this guy, Liam Day, who used to be a pro basketball player, and he wrote beautiful, unbelievable piece about how rich the universities are getting on these players, and how these it was a beautiful piece. And
it was
almost
good stuff. It was very on brand for us.
It was seriously about how it was very much about race and this intersectionality of race and gender and NCAA and how basically like these few really rich white guys get really rich off of these few and mostly black young men.
Yeah.
And how they get injured their bodies, basically. But it was about a lot more than that, too. It was about turning them into meat and making them into objects. So this piece that was just crazily on brand, and I think it got like 1,000 page views.
Mm-hmm.
And so not only do we need to be having those conversations, we need to find a way to market those conversations so that they're getting read. And maybe the roundtable idea is the way to do it, where we say, NCAA Final Four, good or bad, for young men. And then we have the Hilberger sides, and maybe that would be a way to get this whole debate, you know, maybe that would be a way to get Liam Day and Oliver Lee Bateman in opposing sides talking about something where people actually read it. At this point, I think we should do both. You know what I mean? I think we should lead the conversation around certain things that we think are important by the roundtable idea.
Hi. This is Julie. I just jumped back in.
This is
Patty. I'm really uncomfortable with framing the roundtable things as good versus bad. I know we have good in the name, but that's not a good way to frame things. And yesterday's roundtable was not feminism, good versus bad. It was what is the role of feminism with regard to men's issues. And that's why we got interesting and civil content. If we framed it as good versus bad, it would have been a train wreck. I think it's important to consider the language we use in talking about these things, because that's how we start building models in our minds. And, framing is important.
We definitely don't have to say good versus bad, but we could say any question about NCAA or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As the NCAA become too commercial, they're still sort of thing as amateur basketball. Yeah.
What was the language we used exactly? It was, or at least Tom started the discussion with the language of how is a good man, what is a good man in relation to feminism or something to that effect? And if we can use what is a good man, if we can figure out how to use that language and then introduce the subject, we get to that good-bad thing without necessarily getting to good-bad as a black and white polarized thing. But it does lead with the question of, are there ethical issues or are there moral issues relating to this subject? Should you let your kid play with a video game when he's 4? Those kinds of questions then can be addressed in that context.
I like that, because then it's not necessarily even demonizing the thing that you're asking about. Like, if you were going to talk about pornography or strip clubs, there probably are ways to be good and be in relationship with certain things that the culture is not in favor of. And so it doesn't necessarily demonize pornography. It looks at relationships between how we interact in our ethics, in our morals, in a culture that's confusing about these topics.
Yeah, and if you have people talking about technology from the position of what is a good man, there are men who can argue that game playing is going to be the new paradigm for education, and that helping your child understand video game playing is going to introduce him to a way that's going to become more ubiquitous. Another man may say, no, in order to help my child focus, he does crafts and art when he's 4, 5, 6, and then he gets access to those technologies. But first he learned. So there's ways to speak from the position of what is good, not condemning things so much as speaking about things in a way. So it's a different starting position, I think, in some ways.
And all you do this is to frame your argument. Before you let people have an opinion, you must present the argument as a framework so that people draw their information and their point of view from the point of view that you set up when you start the argument. You write it into the article, you write it into the framework, and you say, these are the points of view we're looking for. So you precondition people to respond to what you want them to.
Well, here's a thought. Instead of, like, good versus bad, a long time ago we had this idea of branding something as the moral compass. So, like, a compass has 4 different points, you know, and they're all in opposition to each other, but the only way it works is if you have all of those. So this idea of a moral compass is something that, you know, we're actually trying to develop in people as individuals. So there might be an interesting thing to do around that. But I also just wanted to get back to Josh's point, and Joanna, you had touched on this a little. So there's sort of 2 different things here. So these roundtable things are the way that we take our brand and we lead the conversation. But what Josh is talking about is that there's actually lots of conversations out there already that we could still be a part of. And I do think that that's important, too. I think it's important to let other people lead conversations, but for us to come in with our own unique point of view to the brand, I think that's hugely important. But I think that we can do both. It's not like an either-or thing. I think we should and can and have to do both. So I'm with you, Josh, on that.
Okay. We can do better on that if we are simply able to find those articles that trend, connect to them, see them. I've experimented with the idea that if you're writing about a thing and there are a lot of people in a place, or for example, using Twitter, Twitter has a propensity for creating virtual crowds that are for a period of time talking about a thing. And you insert your articles into those crowds, people will read them, respond to them, and very often propagate them if they like them. And so what could happen is that we can just find those things that are trending that day or that week, and at the end of the week, we do a summary of, you know, this is what happened in the news this week, and here's what we thought of that. And that way people can get used to the idea of seeing that and asking from a point of view that is ours what we actually thought of that versus what, you know, Fox said or what New York Times said, or maybe we even look at both of their points of view and say, how can anybody make an intelligent decision when the information that's being presented is so left or so right or so strange that there really isn't any room to make a decision? Maybe we should just promoting the facts. Promoting the facts would make us alternative all by itself.
Like a Twitter trend roundup. You could brand it as Twitter trend roundup, and it happens once a week, and you talk about the things that trended that week.
I'm also going to say, I think there's like certain issues that you can predict are going to be talked about, at least, I mean among men that can have our perspective. So the NFL football season is going to start up soon again. And I know the discussion of concussions and that whole thing is going to happen. And I don't know, like, how robust was that discussion around, you know, do fathers let their sons participate in a violent sport? You know, what about concussions? What about the fact that, you know, football is going to end up being the sport where the have-nots have to participate because it's so dangerous? Like, I think there's like a lot of questions that can be asked around that issue, and it can be framed in such a way where it's interesting, but it's also connected to something where people already are interested in, and, you know, the conversation is already happening in larger and bigger spaces.
You know, this is Mark Sherman here. I think that's great. As I'm listening to this thing about football and thinking, that brings up, in a nutshell, so many of the issues that men deal with and women as well. And the idea of a sport, which I know I love, and two of my sons anyway, love it. But there's all, you know, we didn't realize until recently how really dangerous it is. And now there's a lot of attention to that. I know a guy who loves football. He's the sweetest, most gentle guy, and he loves football. And he says he's having trouble watching it because of his awareness of the injuries. And so that, I think, really captures some of the issues that we contend with. Here's something, and the plays themselves, there's a great piece in the New York Times some time ago in the sports section by a guy who had played in the NFL and how much he had been hurt, but how much he loved it. And that's also kind of weird. I mean, here are these guys who are being hurt, and yet if you said to them, well, we're not going to allow this game anymore, they themselves would be probably outraged. So it's I think that'd be a great thing to do.
I think there's also a big question around football, too, that's a different aspect of masculinity, which is the disposability of men. Like, if you look at Junior Seau, you say, this man was put on the earth with as much potential as anyone else, and then from everything we guess right now, he lost his life, in some way or another because of football, and is it worth it to sacrifice these men's lives for our entertainment? And that leads into every other career in which you say, why are men so disposable to our society?
I have a question, you guys. When we're sitting here talking about these things, one of the things I was thinking about recently, because I write with another group, is there a place that we store this written data? For example, my other group, we use Google Docs. We have a master doc that we put our ideas into, and then we, as we're writing the stuff we're writing, we claim an article or say, I'm going to write an article about this and make a quick summary there, and then if somebody wants to write a comparative or an analysis or an antagonistic article, they also post it there, and then when we post, we try to schedule our posting so they either happen together because they might be good together, or very separately because they might completely cause the space-time continuum to be destroyed. So what I'm hearing here is we have all these great ideas, but we don't have any way to capture them and share them with each other so that a group of ideas could be put on a Google Doc page, that page can be shared with everyone who's writing, and then we put in ideas as we come across them. We could separate them by type, by genre, by idea, and then as we get a group of ideas, let's say I have an idea, but I don't know anything about sports, but assuming I don't. But I think, why don't we study this particular thing? Well, I might not have the idea to write it, but I could put it in the list, and maybe someone else whose expertise is perfect for that puts it in and says, hey, I want to take that, and they go and write the article instead.
Yeah, no, we love that. So we have, we've already started a Google Doc that's very sparse right now, but, just for some of the core editors that has story ideas, but I would love to open that up to everybody in this group. I mean, we can do that today. Now, I'll send you the emails of everyone on this call, and if you could send the Google Doc around so that people can add, I would love to have all of you involved in that. That'd be great.
That sounds good. I can add them to the share list on that document.
You know what would you know what would be helpful to me?
I volunteer for the... Okay.
I was just going to say, what would be helpful to me is some kind of a real-time document that isn't that speaks to specifically to the blog and specifically to trending news stories. Because right now I get an email from Joanna sometimes that says, here's five links that we may want to blog about. But what strikes me as interesting about this idea is I have to go off and do research to figure out what's trending right now or what news stuff is breaking. And if we had some kind of a war room around this idea of jumping on subjects as they're breaking and getting content into those news feeds right away, that I could just click on and go, holy crap, look at that. That's what's going on in the last 15, 20 minutes. Because collectively we're all posting to it. Because if there's 30 of us that are at one time or another looking at trending news right now, and we just took a second to post it there, if we don't have time to, in fact, write a blog for it, that thing would be this living document that would help us track what's happening.
Yeah.
That may or may not work.
Love
but
that.
It's an idea.
Google
Doc could do that just as easily as any other kind of document. I mean, our document does both. It's live for things that are happening. It still means somebody has to go and be aware of that, so one of us keeps a running Twitter feed. But, you know, beyond that, it's just a matter of, hey, I think this is great. I grab it right out of Twitter. I paste it there, and that way I get the guy's name or the person's name, and I get the article, and if there's a link, I get the link to it. And that keeps us a document that we can then go back later and say, hey, a week later or a day later, this was still pretty awesome. It's still trending. Maybe we should write something.
Yeah, either that or maybe a Twitter feed is a better way to go at this. We could just say, you know, # GMP trending, and anybody who wants to tweet, look, I just think retweet it to that # then all we have to do is flip open Twitter and we'll and go to that and search for that hash, and we would get this, the, you know, the same effect without having to type it in at you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm just talking about
it
literally.
They're not, they don't last forever. More than a week, and that tweet is probably gone.
Well,
yeah.
actually, you know, we did go through a period of time, and I still do on a regular basis try to use the / Goodman Project hashtag, or I mean, I'm sorry, / Goodman, and or # Goodman. And what happens with that is I pull about a weekly report or so. I haven't been on top of it because we really weren't getting much response and nobody was really participating. But, you know, if everybody's using the Goodman hashtag, then what I do is I pull a report from Twitter that has all of the Goodman hashtags, and they go into our page on Storify, and it's served up as a news feed or as a news report, just like in a newspaper, of every single # Goodman tweet that's been sent out there. And some of them are from us, and some of them are the retweets, and, you know, and so we do have a running list if everybody will use, you know, the same hashtags. You know, and we've had this discussion before where, you know, we've got the Goodman hashtag. Well, we use the hashtags for the categories, you know, for the headings at the top of the page, or for the categories that, where the posts are being made. And, you know, between the combination of the two, we're able to streamline and say, okay, you know, this is a Goodman Project tweet. It's related to families, you know, because we're all using the same hashtags. So it's an excellent idea, but here's my issue with that. You know, one of the biggest things that we could ever do all along, and I'm always on the soapbox, I know you guys get tired of hearing about it, but, you know, we're talking about manual involvement. We're talking about human interactivity. And what happens is, or what history says, is that when we start asking each other to go and support other people's documents, or when we go to Reddit and please upload this, or go to you know, Google Plus and help spread the word with all the posts that we're putting in there, you know, to help support the writing that's being done and the content that we're providing, the participation is at a very, very minimal level, even from as simple as using the social buttons that are attached to each and every post. So, you know, based on the idea that, you know, we're getting minimal participation from our own community, you know, from our own evangelist community, in using those tools that we have in place, how realistic is it for me to think, as a social media guy, that we're all going to use the same hashtags and that I'm going to be able to pull a report every day and have that available where everybody can take a look at it? I mean, again, we have to remember that we're asking ourselves to do more work than what we're already doing now. And it's well worth it, in my opinion. But, you know, I can only crack the whip as much as I can. I can only ask for as much help as I can. And of course, Lisa is in the position that we're, you know, we're all already doing a lot of work for basically nothing. So, you know, so she's in an awkward position with that as well. So, you know, I don't know what the answer to that problem is. I've seen a lot of
work smarter, not better.
Yeah, I think this is a work smarter question.
I need to get off this call. Actually, my phone's about to die, so
okay.
I'm about to vanish and didn't want anybody to think I was just sneaking out in the middle of the night. So
no problem.
All right, guys, I'll catch up. The rest of this one goes up.
I just want to
give you an example of a perfect tool. Have you ever heard of a tool called Rebel Mouse or Twyla? Both of those tools are brilliant at taking a Twitter stream and turning it into a blog-like page. If you haven't seen Rebel Mouse,
Rebel Mouse is a brilliant tool. I like Twilight a little better because it's a little more interactive, but Rebel Mouse is a little more physically attractive, so they could both be used. But you could take the Goodman feed, if you don't have one, you make one, and you use the hashtag, and you just include the Goodman hashtag and one other hashtag, and you put them together, you tweet them, and we can have a page that puts itself together that you can then refer people to see what we think is important, articles that we write or articles that we approve, and they can show up on that page, and nobody has to do a whole lot of anything.
But
they do have to do something. They have to do something on the front end. They have to support each other, and they have to use the social media tools on the front end, and they have to use those hashtags.
Guys,
or it's pointless.
I want to just say something about this Twitter hashtag issue, and I'm only talking about one thing. I'm talking about trending blog news stories, using it as a tool only for that. I'm not talking about creating a legacy of what was tweeted a week later, being able to refer to it or anything. What I'm suggesting is that right now, if we're I believe Josh is right, Joanna knows that drives huge traffic. And if indeed we can be more engaged with breaking news from the GMP, that this Twitter hashtag thing is simply and only a real-time tracker for stories, so that Joanna doesn't have to write an email and send it to us that we then get around to seeing an hour and a half later. Because if I say, hey, I got 10 minutes, I can do a blog post, I would just click over and see what all of us are pointing at that one feed. No one has to even write an email or write a Google Doc post or anything else. All they have to do is retweet something to that hashtag and go on with their day. And those of us who have a moment can then see it and go, oh my God, this is happening. Okay, I'm going to track that and do it. And that's
the reason I talked about Rebel Mouse, because it does exactly that. It tags your tweet. It puts it together. It puts it in a board that everybody can see. It's public access. Everyone can get to it. Everyone knows when it happened, what time it happened, and who sent it. It's perfect for what you're trying to do.
Yeah, I just think the Twitter feed would work for me. I wouldn't have to go an extra step to see a page or anything else. I'd just look at the feed. And in the last 2 hours, I would see what people have pushed over to that feed. And I would know. But I'm not saying my answer's right. I'm just pointing out that a single click and you're done. You know, you write the hashtag and click, then you can keep going. I don't know if it'll work or not. But I don't want to belabor it too much.
Yeah, no, I think Jack was just saying that it still does involve people tagging them. That's all he was saying. So let's look into I totally think we should look into all of those ideas. I think that the bigger point is, how do we figure out what the trends are every day, and how
yes.
do we get that information to everybody else who wants to be engaged and then wants to write about these. So that's the problem we want to solve. I don't know what the answer is based on this conversation, but I'd love to pursue that. Josh, would you be interested in taking the lead on some of this? Are you still there? Or was Josh the one who had to leave? I'll follow up with him later. Well, anyway, you know, if there are people here that would be interested in actually taking the lead on this and helping to manage it and be seen as leaders for this, that would be really, really helpful. So just you can, and you don't have to, I'm not going to put anyone on the spot now, but you can email me afterwards. Go ahead.
No, I just wanted, because I'd like to come away from stuff actually with the idea of like what we decided. So in the interim, before we do that, I think all the ideas were really good. So in the interim, we're just saying, like, if I see like a cool news story, and I'm on Twitter all the time and I retweet stuff all the time. If I see a cool news story that I think is really cool, I'll just add the hashtag Goodman, and then people can search that hashtag, and then boom, 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 right? That's it. So I add my own hashtags all the time. So I'll just start adding hashtag Goodman to stuff I think that's pertinent to the conversation that I think is also trending. I mean, that's what I'll do on my own.
If there's room and you're inclined to add whatever category it's in, that helps as well, too. But it's not, you know, the Goodman thing is that serves as branding as well. You know, we want to corner that hashtag, so... that's definitely the one that would be mandatory. But if we can clarify it even more, that's even better. But that's the important one.
All right, cool. I just wanted to take that away from here. So I'll start doing that as soon as we get off the call.
Yeah,
So that's a really easy way people can start with this idea. So that would be great. And then the other idea of the Google Docs for the more long-term story ideas is something I think we should do as well. So everyone on this call will be invited to that shared document. And that, and you can put trending stuff in there too, or dates of things that are coming up, or, you know, like the idea of the of planning now for the draft is great, for stories around the draft is great. But those are... those aren't so much today's news. You know, that Google Doc isn't so much today's news and what do we write about. That's what are the stories that define our brand, and let's get those stories out there so that people who have the time and ability to write about those can write about them.
Well, I volunteered for the to edit or help co-edit or whatever the whole NFL concussion discussion thing.
That's great.
Or whatever. So,
yeah,
Sean, you can put me down for that.
You are down.
And by the way, the hashtag good
I just
men.
Want to take for a second, come back to the on the agenda, item one, which I guess we were talking about earlier, about do we want to be more mainstream without becoming more stereotypically male, or is it okay to be more? I don't know about the stereotypically male thing, but I think one of the reasons I really love going on the Good Men Project is I feel entirely comfortable. Now, I know there's going to be a variety of views, and I may find some of them objectionable personally, but at least I know it's a site that welcomes me as a man. And I just recommended the site to a friend of mine who's, you know, a real guy's guy, and he's his marriage has ended, he's got some anger issues. And I recommended it to him. I said it's got a broad range of stuff because I felt that he would be comfortable there. There might be some stuff that turns him off because it's too far one way or the other. But I think whatever we do, we should make sure to have that really welcoming feeling to men. Not that women should feel unwelcome, without question, but that I know that's something that I wouldn't have recommended the site to this friend of mine if I didn't feel so comfortable with it. And I just think we should always keep that in mind.
Yeah, so that's a really good point, though, Mark. Can you tell me things that might make you feel uncomfortable? Because that's actually what I'm trying to get my finger on. Like, what would, you know, what would have made it so you wouldn't have recommended that site?
I'm not exactly sure because I feel comfortable talking, but I know, I mean, I, you know, we all have our feelings. I've had some issues with extreme feminism and stuff. I was a college teacher for a lot of years, and political correctness began to get to me. I talked about the boys issue and my sons and my grandsons, and that's, you know, gotten me, you know, with a certain amount, for want of a better word, anger, but, you know, not extreme stuff. So I know things that are really way to that side might turn, you know, might turn me off. But again, in the there's always so much back and forth. I mean, I think this thing about the round table, I mean, those two titles, I don't have them right in front of me. You know, feminism shouldn't be involved in this, and the other one is feminism should be involved in this. I think that's great. And I think maybe having both sides is very, very helpful. It's when it's one-sided that if I began to see a trend, you know, to be honest with you, the title, Good Men Project, just that title alone, if I didn't know anything else, I've always had this issue it's almost like saying there's something deficient in the very fact of being male, and therefore we have to work at that to make ourselves good. And that troubles me, even though I know a lot of men really do screw up, and I've been one of them, unfortunately. But it's stuff like that. But once I start reading it, and the title is our title, I think it's great, then I really feel much more confident. And I think if it leans much too much about how to make our boys, you know, so good and stuff like that, then I begin to have trouble. But I don't feel that way. I feel it's very welcoming, and I think that's great. And if I began to feel it wasn't, then I might not be so quick to return to the site.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, we have worked incredibly hard, to be honest with you, to make it so that it's not, doesn't seem like we think men are broken in any way, shape, or form.
Right, I see that.
But that there are things that, you know, all of us could do better. And that's actually why I welcome female voices, because I want us females to be accountable for the fact that we screw up too. You know?
Right.
Quite frankly. So that, you know, that to me, more than anything, is the reason why I think it should be a dialogue between us. But yeah, we do work really hard on just that. Make it welcoming. Make it so that you're not going to come here and feel shamed in any way for being a man or for doing things that you think are masculine that, you know, people might not think are good. So,
right,
yeah, we
right.
work really hard on that.
And
I think also,
go ahead.
No,
no, it's the same too.
Jinx.
We should go. Go. You go. You go.
Okay. So just to piggyback off of what Mark is saying, I agree. Like, you know, I recommend, you know, the site and stuff even before I started. Like, my blog got integrated because, again, like, I'm not a fan of any sort of, like, inherent, like, male bashing or men bashing or, like, this notion that, like, their masculinity can't be expressed in, like, a positive, affirming way. So I think, like, two ways to make sure that it doesn't happen is, one, content. So, you know, just make sure the content or, like, a lot of the content doesn't, you know, belittle men or is condescending and stuff. And also that people, the participants, like, so commenters and stuff like that, also don't engage in that way, like, of, you know, shaming men, et cetera, et cetera. And I think, like, if the mission is to be accommodating to men, but then we do it with the intent of being very positive and compassionate and opening and open, then, you know, women will feel welcome anyway. Like, I don't think you have to necessarily be accommodating to men. That means you're inherently not accommodating to women. Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. Like, you know, it's just like like H&M, a woman's store or something. Like, it's a nice store, you know, it may cater to women, but it's not like they're not saying I can't come into the store. So I think just because we're like a male-centric site, but if it's the intent and the presentation is very caring and loving, like, I don't think that's going to shoo women away. So I guess that's all I want to say on that.
That's a very good point. And all I was going to say before is, you know, when I talk to my male friends, I mean, I did research a long time ago on what men talk about with each other and what women talk about with each other. And the men stuff didn't surprise me, but some of it did. Like, a lot of men aren't interested in sports, and I always was, so that was a little bit of a surprise, but still. But in my conversations with my male friends, things are said sometimes they would never say to their wives. They would never, you know, and they express it honestly. And I think that honest voice, and it's a little scary, because if you write honestly, very often people are going to get angry with you. I think that, you know, when Betty Friedan wrote in 1963 or 4, The Feminine Mystique, and she talked about the problem that has no name, there was stuff that women were talking about amongst each other all the time, and they had some major things to talk about. And men, you know, it's not like they're so dissatisfied and everything, but they're just certain issues that they're comfortable talking about with each other. And again, we shouldn't be exclusive, but it's that, there's a certain thing about honesty, where if something's well-written and it's honest, a lot of people say, yeah, I know what that feels like. And again, I think that I see that a lot already, and I think the more we have of that, the better.
I'd also like to say that the Good Men Project never struck me as a project to make good men out of bad men. It always struck me as a communication project whereby what defines a good man is much broader and much more diverse, and it's a project to communicate that to both men and women. It's not about fixing anybody. It's about sharing stories that are not stereotypical and narrow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I like that.
Agreed.
That was always the original mission, but I talked about this on another call, that some people just took each of those words and you know, spun it to the way that they had always seen the world working, and project was one of those words where they thought needs to be improved on, was the way that word was taken.
By the way, hashtag Goodman is going to be a flood of posts that have nothing to do with the Goodman Project. I just looked.
Yeah, I know. I've been aware of that.
Yeah, it needs to be like, so, it could be Goodman blog. What's the Goodman blog feed? There's a hashtag.
I would suggest GMP rather than
GMP, Yeah.
Joanna's got one she already uses for the blog feed.
So are we agreeing it's GMP or we're not?
Hang on, let me check. Joanna's got Good Feed Blog, hashtag Good Feed Blog. Right, Joanna?
Good Feed Blog, though, is...
And that doesn't bring up... Yeah, but if we're talking trending immediate news, but that's not polluted with any other stuff. Nobody else is posting to that, or... But whatever we do, GoodFeed blog is clean.
So unequivocally, it's GoodFeed blog. All right, thank you. I just wanted to. I'll do that.
I will too.
What is the feed we're supposed to be doing?
For trending, the idea is trending good news. GoodFeed blog. Hashtag GoodFeed blog.
Okay, well, it's 1 o'clock. Does everyone know next steps? We're gonna do two things moving forward. We're gonna have more of these round tables. We're actually three things. So we're going to do more of these roundtables where we're taking really provocative topics and having all points of view from it, but we're defining how they relate to our brand up front. And then another thing is we're just going to have ongoing story ideas of people that people think are important. We're going to have a Google Doc, which everyone on this call is going to be invited to, so you can put the more deeper, more interesting, more thoughtful story ideas on that. And then we're working on ways to get the trending stories to the attention of everyone. So for those people on Twitter, when you see a story that's of interest, if you tag it, hashtag GoodFeedBlog, that'll let people know that that's a trending story that you think people should be paying attention to. And then we also just need to figure out a way to get people to jump on those stories quicker so that we really all are talking about the stories as they come out, so that we're immediately putting up a post as those stories break.
And I think we need to talk more at each other on Twitter, too, so I'll try to do that more often.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah, talking more at each other is a really good idea.
Maybe you should include
really
that in
the conversation. Yeah, I'll put that in the evangelist.
The people's Twitter addresses, since, you know, if everybody doesn't know who everybody is on Twitter, it might help to be able to find each other. And they get, hi, I'm joining, and I'm going to take this, and here's my Twitter tag, you know, and they're on their way. And you can follow them and know where they are, and no song or dance, and no one else has to do it.
Right. Great idea. Got it.
All right.
Well, thanks so much, everyone, and we'll talk again next week.
Okay,
thanks. Again.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.